The fight for freedom of speech, freedom of inquiry, and freedom to think what we want, and that's where it's ultimately going, continues. Ted Pike is at the forefront of it. He's been doing this for many, many years on behalf of all Americans, many of which who don't even know we are under siege and may lose to a large degree, a substantial degree, our right to freely speak about which we things we find and those items which we think ought to be spoken about, because it, in some cases, may offend certain federally designated minority groups. That's the pretext, at any rate. So to bring us up to date on the latest developments on this now multi-front war on freedom of speech, and they are probing, they are doing reconnaissance and plotting and mapping and strategizing all the time, is Reverend Ted Pike. Hi, Ted. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
Yeah. All right. Let's. The latest is, I guess, the temporary victory. We lost horrible threat, Section 220, on the Senate side. Tell us about that story.
Yes, well, thanks to a tremendous input, not only from the listeners to Alternative Talk Radio, but CWA, that's Concerned Women for America, and
oh,
Dr.
Good.
Dobson, and American Family Association, and others, we got a tremendous roll of upheaval of protest coming into the Senate last week, and it was very, very providential, very mighty deliverance, in my opinion, from God to this nation once again. And in a kind of a second round in the Senate, actually what happened was that on Wednesday, I believe it was, there was a stalemate. The Democrats weren't going to give an inch. They were
right.
not going to give up Section 220.
Right.
They want to register so-called grassroots lobbyists all the way down to the bottom, practically. They want to consider anyone who calls into Congress now a lobbyist, a grassroots lobbyist.
Now let me ask you, excuse the interruption, let me ask you to pause there, because this is we got new people every night listening. This is really important. Ladies and gentlemen, this law, this proposed law, was actually on the docket. It called for anyone, you just heard Ted talk about this, anyone who calls Congress would be defined as a lobbyist. Anyone who's on the Internet who reaches, was it 500 people a year?
Yeah, it's a minimum of 500.
Uh-huh. Now, that's it. Now, if you have a little teeny tiny web blog or blog, as they call it, or you send out a mass email to 500-600 people, you would have had to, under this Democrat-supported section of this bill, register with the federal government as a lobbyist and report it four times a year to the United States federal government. Okay?
Well, actually, you would have to either donate $25,000 of your own money receive $25,000 within that quarter.
And that would have made the requirement that you, report. Okay.
Yeah. But really, you know, there are many large evangelical conservative churches who bring in literally millions of dollars in offering.
So, well, $25,000 isn't much, right?
They set aside a social action fund of $25,000. That means they have got to report every nickel and dime that is spent during that quarter. And not only that, but this new Section 220, it's a little different from the last term in Congress. It was rejected last year, but the new version now says that the government defines a member of that church or member of that organization as anyone who donates even more than the most token amount of money to that organization or the most token amount of time to that organization.
Like $10.
That's right. If you give more than $5 or $10 in a year, you are now considered by the government to be a member of that organization.
Okay.
Now, what's the reasoning behind that? Well, it's because this law would have made the directors of that grassroots lobbying firm, as it's described, accountable for their members. And this heightens the responsibility of this organization or church or conservative group to be accountable for its members. It stiffens and raises the possibility of legal responsibility for how that money is spent. And it could be spent on development of a website or mailings or anything like that from the grassroots level. And So what this was doing was trying to entangle Christian conservative activism at the grassroots in such onerous and heavy reporting and accounting responsibilities that many of them would just say, basically, you know, hey, this isn't worth it. And in back of all that is this ominous threat of a $100,000 fine if you don't give exactly the kind of answers or details that the government is going to require of you. And what this is basically an unprecedented attempt to force all grassroots lobbying organizations to get permission from the government in order to speak out. Now, we have a wonderful tradition here in the United States that we can call our member of Congress, and we are not called a citizen lobbyist or a grassroots lobbyist by the government. We're called an American citizen who is exercising his First Amendment rights. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Rights of petition and rights of free speech.
Sure.
We're not considered a lobbyist, but now what these Democrats and Levin and Lieberman, here again we have these Jewish activists behind us, Levin and Lieberman brought this Section 220 in last year. What they're wanting to do is to establish perfect uniformity and consistency in the United States. So it's not just the Abramoffs, it's not just the high rollers in Congress, but everyone who's a potential lobbyist, clear down to the grassroots level, has to be part of this bureaucratic system of registration and accountability to the government. And this is the beginnings of a police state. This is the beginnings of the right of the government to know the name and the address and the bank account and the funds and everything of literally every person in the United States who could possibly oppose their national policies.
Okay, 220 was separated from the bill, which went on to pass 90-something to 5. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it finally did. Actually, the vote, Senator Robert Bennett played a very, very important part on behalf of freedom by proposing Amendment 20, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, this was at loggerheads last Wednesday, and the Republicans were very well aware of 220. They've been getting a lot of flack, and they were determined not to let the Democrats get away with that and push it through. And as you're probably aware, the Democrats are in the driver's seat. They are vindictive. They are bullying now, and it's really relatively rare now that the Republicans are even able to get any amendments in.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was the Democrats were determined not to strip off 220. They want to kill grassroots conservative America, the legacy of the Reagan Revolution. They don't like it one bit. And so what happened was there was a vote, and they did not get the full 60 votes in the Senate necessary to pass the lobby reform bill, including Section 220.
Right, it failed.
I think it was 57 votes they had. And so there was this big stalemate, and everybody was... the Democrats were accusing the Republicans and back and forth, and the major news media came out with a premature story, which they got from Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, who was the one who initiated this lobby reform bill. And Senator Reid made the announcement that the lobby reform bill, the big bill, was dead. And so we read that in the Oregonian here in Portland, and we also called back to Reid's office, and they said, yeah, it's dead, it's
done. They were pretty discouraged, too.
Yeah, so like a lot of major news outlets, I made the announcement that the lobby reform bill was dead, and I was jubilant, of course, because that would have ended the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next day,
conference and compromise.
Yeah, they got back together, and... providentially, that gave it another opportunity for the Republicans to demand that Section 220 be stripped off. And this time, I believe after not only a lot of conflict and desire for a resolution there, but a tremendous amount of flack coming from the American people protesting 220, Senator Bennett's amendment, one that was approved by... I think it was 54 to 43 or something like that,
right.
And it was stripped off, making that a tremendous victory. And, of course, I never had any great conflict with the lobby reform bill, but I sure did with Section 220.
Well, of course, and that's the part of how this government works or doesn't work, however you will, that people don't understand. These amendments to bills, these little addendums to bills, which have nothing to do in many cases, this is a little bit different, but nothing to do with the primary bill. They'll tack things on at 2 a.m., and the senators come in or the congressmen come in the next. They don't even see it. They don't pay much attention to it. That's how they do it. It's stealth legislation.
Yes.
And it's very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. There ought to be a law against it, Ted. A bill should have to do with what the bill is intended to deal with and nothing else.
That's right.
But that's how they do it. Hold on. Be right back with Reverend Ted Pike as we continue to battle on your behalf to preserve our Constitution and our First Amendment right to freedom of speech. Ted, the lobby bill with Section 220 was a little different approach in this multi-pronged attempt to denude us of our freedom of speech. I expect we're going to see others. The enemy is very shrewd. There are many different angles, and they're always looking for weak points, soft points, with which they can abuse us. And they're quite good at finding them. This was a little different. This one, will there be others? And I guess the answer is obviously yes, and if so, we'll see them fairly soon, I would think.
Yes, as you mentioned, it's called stealth legislation. Sometimes they want a tremendous amount in one lump sum, and I think the federal so-called anti-hate bill is in that category. But if they can't get that, then they continue to jockey for positions of advantage and find ways to create piecemeal legislation, taking apart our freedoms and rights a little bit at a time. That's the principle of what's called creeping socialism. You never quite, kind of like if you're in a garage and the car engine is going, things are fine, you're eating your lunch, but the toxic fumes are very, very slowly and insidiously putting you to sleep.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing here, and we can expect more of this. That's why, as never before in history, we have to have watchdog organizations and watchdogs people who are dedicated almost full time to ferreting out what's happening and alerting the people.
Okay, let's go back to the actual hate law status right now. Where are we with that?
Yes, that was introduced on January 5th by Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. That was introduced into the House, and her office told me that they are sure that it will be put into the Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. Sheila Jackson Lee is a kind of a permanent fixture in that committee. Actually, the House has been rather slow in appointing the final members of that committee, but I understand just today Pelosi says they're having a big meeting tomorrow and will be doing that quite rapidly. We've been saturating the committee as of last year with brochures, hate crimes brochures, and calls for the last week or so. But the final members of that committee will probably be determined this week. But I should just tell people that it's not been in vain, even though we may have had a few, we'll have a few changes. Usually these committees, when people get into them, they become experts in that area, and they have a tendency to be reappointed as fixtures. And so it's all a tremendous investment. I'm sure many, many hundreds, if not thousands, of our hate crimes brochures have already descended upon the Subcommittee on Crime. But as soon as that's reconstituted under the new regime, we will post those new members at truthtellers.org.
Okay. All right. So here we are, the end of January, nearly the end of January. This is meandering around the house, I assume. Where is it right now?
Well, as soon as that committee is constituted, the hate bill will go to it.
To it.
Yes, and again, I was...
Are they carefully, do you get the sense that they're constructing this committee, perhaps, in such a way that legislation will just be given a kind of a green light right through it?
All we know is that Pelosi is in charge of things, and as she has the right, you see, to make committee appointments among the Democrats at her own discretion.
She could staff the whole committee.
Well, there are going to be Republicans on it. It's a bipartisan, but it's going to be staffed with as much power and bang for her buck as she can possibly get out of it, and. So we're going to have to continue to saturate that committee. Right now, as soon as that committee is formed, I was assured by the staff at Jackson Lee's office that since the hate bill was passed by the House of Representatives about a year and a half ago,
right,
then all the groundwork, all the necessary investigation has been made, which is absurd. But the Jackson Lee's people said that they probably would just have a voice vote on it, and in a couple of minutes it would be referred back to the Judiciary Committee, and then of course the Judiciary Committee would rubber stamp it and then put it on the docket for a vote in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And so at every stage here, we're going to keep everybody posted, and we're going to continue to blitz the House of Representatives. I think one thing that everybody has to understand now is that we had a massive victory already in the Senate, and that's a result primarily, in my opinion, of being preemptive and sounding the alarm and getting the calls going in there literally a week or 10 days before the final vote was taken. And I'm very grateful, of course, to the response of the big religious right organizations, but those all came very, very late. On the other hand, they have a massive constituency compared to what I have, but we all work together to defeat the Section 220 in the Senate. But now the big fight is going to be in the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. you see, because mm-hmm. number one, Pelosi is going to want to tag 220 back on with a new amendment number, but she's going to want to tag on that legislation and see mm-hmm. if she can get it through the House. And then number two, the hate bill is in for consideration, maybe just a cursory consideration in the Subcommittee on Crime. So what we have to do, Jeff, is we have to make this a big issue. We have to make this a hot potato there in the House of Representatives. You see, what the ADL wants to do with this stealth legislation is work behind the scenes so there's no controversy about it. We've got to create controversy.
Indeed, and now's the time. This is a fight that we're going to have to continue. It's not going to go away. And win again, we will. Win again, because we must. Be right back. Okay, as we move into this next stage in the attempt to take away our freedom of speech, now remember, 10, I guess maybe it's 10 European countries and Canada have these so-called anti-hate laws on the books, and the results have been just devastating to the public. Who at this point in time, Ted, is the largest base? Now, you mentioned the religious right, but how solid is it? Is it coalescing? Is it growing all the time? Is there a cohesive movement, group, affiliation of peoples and organizations out there that you can call on that can put the kind of pressure on these wimps and cowards and schemers in Congress that that needs to be done? Or is this still basically a grassroots kind of a thing?
I think the real energy, the real vitality for congressional reform is now coming from alternative talk radio. Frankly, I would rather to be on one of these programs on Republic or Genesis than I would on some big religious Salem station, because the evangelicals are soft. They've had it good ever since Reagan came in the early 80s. It's kind of business as usual, and they're pretty much in bed with the Zionist lobby and so on, and they don't want to criticize the evil Jewish leaders of B'nai B'rith and the evil Jewish activism that's behind all of this. I believe that it's a reality that the hate bill has not been criticized, the ADL has not been criticized, because they are so quintessentially Jewish, and new right leaders, the evangelical right leaders, are timid about criticizing what almost amounts to a Jewish institution, which is hate crimes governments throughout the world.
Well, we have to always remember that there are an awful lot of Jews that support our work in trying to stop this. They understand.
Absolutely.
And we need to make that clear. We're talking about those of a supremacist mindset. Zionism is certainly at the core of it all. But there are many, many Jews who write for me and call in and talk and email who are every bit as concerned about this, because we've talked about this in the past, Ted, that this legislation, should it pass, will be used not only against us, it'll be used against everyone, by everyone else. It could literally gridlock the country into a paralysis the likes of which we've not seen in the courts.
Absolutely. And he, by the way, I just love that clip on rants.com of the Naturi Carta people defying the Zionist agenda there, and then an ADL type, a more reform type Jew was berating them terribly.
Well, it's a pretty graphic example of the differences between Jews and then secular Jews who are geopolitically aligned with a movement that is inimical to the interests of our Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's simple. Not only called for the death of those fellow Jews.
Yes, he did.
But he called that their bones be, as he said, pissed upon. Then he said that they have no right to speak as they do. He took away their freedom of speech, executed them, and desecrated their corpses. I mean, this is the kind of mentality that is maybe not spoken often enough, but you see the hatred there, the intensity. It is a very vivid piece of video.
Yeah, and these ADL B'nai B'rith types actually will turn upon their own people, like Rabbi Lapid and Rabbi Wiese and so on, and call them self-hating Jews. That fellow was calling them anti-Semites.
Correct.
Which is usually seems to be reserved for the Goyim, for the Gentiles and so on. But what I'm concerned about is that we keep a complete balance on this whole thing, because you and I both know that a lot of people in the world today are becoming very angry about what they see as the Jews collectively, the Jews wanting to control the legislative process, the media, foreign policy in the Middle East for the United States and so on. Mm-hmm. And we have to make these distinctions.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, we have to admit, of course, that most Jews are liberals, and they are proud to claim that, and they do vote Democrat and so on, but there is a vocal minority. I just got a nice call from a Jew in Atlanta several days ago, and he just said, Reverend Pike, I just want to congratulate you on standing up for freedom. He says, I'm not a Christian, I'm an Orthodox Jew, but I love what you're doing, I support you 100%, and I get many communications like that.
Well, about freedom.
Yeah, that's right. And Rabbi Lapin particularly is very adamant and vociferous against ADL. he actually has a hotline of people who have been called anti-Semitic by the ADL to get in touch with him, and he wants to go to bat for them and stand up for their right to be able to criticize matters Jewish even without being tarred as anti-Semitic, which, as we know, can be very, very damaging to one's reputation.
Yeah, fortunately, less so than in years past, because it has been used 18 million times now.
Yes.
And even Colin Powell, I remember when he made his announcement, and I guess it was a speech in Europe, he said, criticizing the Zionist state of Israel, I'm paraphrasing here, has nothing whatsoever to do with anti-Semitism or being anti-Jewish. I mean, it's criticizing a government policy, for goodness sakes.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
But fundamental to winning, I believe, fundamental to our strategy for long-term winning in Congress is we have to remind people, basically, that this hate bill is the product of ADL, because, you see, what we have to do is we have to bring them out. They are used to walking the halls of the Senate and the House office buildings in secrecy, in anonymity, and again, Levin and Lieberman, and on they're often, these evil Jewish activists, liberal activists, are behind this legislation. They're feeding the hopper there. They're bringing this legislation in. They are acting, and then we have to react. Now, what we have to do long term is we have to let these evil Jewish activists and leaders know that we see who they are. We are going to identify them in the proper balance, in the proper context. But we are going to identify them as the architects of this hate legislation worldwide, so that it will cause embarrassment in the Jewish community, and hopefully millions of Jews who are of good intention and who do not participate in B'nai B'rith International can put pressure on their Jewish liberal brethren in the media and in legislatures and so on to back off and begin to appreciate the gift of Christian civilization and all the blessings it has brought to the Jewish people, rather than trying to tear down our Christmas trees and our mangers and our Ten Commandments and courthouses and Christian symbols and values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, back in a couple minutes with Reverend Ted Pike. And the issue again is freedom of speech, freedom for all. Free even for those who we disagree with, even for those who we despise. They have a right to speak. Everyone should have a right to speak. Unfortunately, there's a power elite that is trying to stamp that right out. All right, we shall continue. Okay, back with Reverend Ted Pike. Ted, who are the allies that you've been able to ascertain as really being aware of the problem in the Congress, if any? Who do you count on for inside leadership? Do we have any in the new Congress? Not necessarily
well,
on the liberal side.
I'll tell you what seems to be happening, Jeff. I am making inroads into the religious right.
Mm-hmm.
And the religious right knows that I'm out there fighting for them. Mm-hmm. Now, they're very, very nervous, obviously, because I do criticize evil Jewish leadership in the tradition of the Hebrew prophets, Jesus and John the Baptist. I do criticize evil Jewish leadership. And there's a superstition among the evangelicals, which we've gotten largely from ADL influence and Zionist influence, that if you criticize a Jew, a terrible curse from God is going to come down on you and on your nation. But gradually what's happening is that people are coming over from the religious right to me, some people of tremendous influence. For example, I have a friend now who has been completely brought over to my point of view, who is a writer in the religious right, an influential columnist. I'm not going to give his name, but he has extensive mailing lists of the movers and shakers of the religious right from top to bottom, knows them all on a first-name basis and so on. During this last few weeks, when nobody was doing anything about the hate bill and virtually nobody about the reform bill, he took my hate bill flyer and he sent it out to 8,000 of the top evangelical movers and shakers on the religious right.
Uh-huh.
And not only did he that, but he sent out a subsequent email alert I had done about the hate law into the very insides of evangelicalism. He sent this out, and thousands of these people have been coming to truthtellers.org.
Really?
I have an article. It's right at the top of truthtellers.org. It says, "What is anti-Semitism?"
Mm-hmm.
Reverend Ted Pike explains. And people are coming to that, evangelicals, and they're being blown away. They have never heard the simple truths that I'm saying there. Basically, what I say in that little article is I say that anti-Semitism is that racist belief that Jews, because of their heredity, are evil, corruptive, subversive, degenerate, and so on.
Right.
I say this is what Hitler believed, and Hitler believed that they should be persecuted for that reason. And then I point out that's not what I'm teaching at Truth Tellers. What I'm saying at Truth Tellers is that evil Jewish leaders, clear from antiquity, have been leading the Jewish flock astray from the leaders in the time of Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, on through Christ and the Pharisees, then through the Talmud and so on. These evil Jewish people, Jewish leaders, excuse me, have been the curse to Israel as they've led them into darkness and idolatry and confusion, and then ultimately into Babylonian Talmudic racism and hatred of Jesus Christ and so on. And What I do is make a very convincing argument that I am doing nothing that's any different than any of the great biblical prophets and sages of the Old Testament. And what I'm doing is I'm demanding of people. I'm saying, how am I any different than the greatest heroes of the Christian and Jewish faith? And the truth of the matter is, there's not an iota of difference. I have a long-term a view of the biblical and prophetic destiny God has for a Jewish remnant who will someday be converted to Christ, just like the Bible teaches. But I'm also unsparing, just like Jesus was, in pointing a bony finger at the evil Jewish leaders who are corrupting, who have corrupted Judaism, and who are even now corrupting America. Anyway, thousands of these evangelicals are now coming to my website and are really being spun around by my new message because they see how biblical it is. They're beginning, the scales are beginning to fall off their eyes, and they're signing up for my newsletters, they're communicating to me, and so on. And I believe that there's a shaking, there's a beginning of a grassroots awakening within the evangelicals, believe it or not, among thinking people. Now, there's a lot of bench warmers who aren't intellectually inquiring. But this friend of mine is very intellectually oriented, action-oriented, and he's been brought completely over to my point of view and working closely with me, basically, to subvert a Zionist propaganda, a century of Zionist propaganda within the New Right. Now, what I believe is developing here is that there are some alliances developing here quietly beneath the scene between those on the constituents of far-right, if you will, talk radio, and also thinking and sincere members of the religious right. And, of course, the leaders are not ready to acquiesce to this. They're maintaining a leery, a distance position from me, but a lot of their followers are now listening to talk radio and the Internet, and these truths are leaping across the propaganda boundaries which heretofore have made it impossible for us to get through to evangelicals.
That's a very interesting situation. I would direct people to do some research and understand how Zionism has betrayed Judaism and people of the Jewish faith. All you have to do, for example, is start on the left-hand side of my homepage and read about halfway down 10 questions to Zionists. This was written by Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl right after World War II ended. He was intimately involved with the effort to save Europe's Jews from the concentration, death, and labor camps that they were consigned to. And the deal was made whereby all the Jews in occupied Europe were to be given free passage to Spain. And Rabbi Wiesmandl and others went to the World Zionists in Switzerland and asked for $2 million. I think it was $2 million is all that was needed. And the Zionists told them to go home. You're not going to get the money. Unless a lot of Jews die during the war, we won't be able to make our case for Israel to be established in Palestine after the war ends. So right then and there is one of the prime examples of a betrayal, the magnitude of which was horrific.
Yeah,
just read Rabbi Wiesmandl's mm-hmm. own hand. I mean, read his writing.
Yeah. Well, here you have the evil Jewish leadership, the same unbelievable evil Jewish leadership today that had Christ crucified 2,000 years ago. The Jewish people are in the hands of the worst false prophets and guides they've ever had today. And what I have to do is I have to say that they have been led astray, and it is not a kindness to them to continue to flatter them and bless them and cease to speak the whole truth to them. You know, the Scriptures say in the book of James, it says you're not supposed to show respect to persons. You're not supposed to exempt certain people from reproof, godly reproof and criticism and so on. Mm. Yet that's exactly what the evangelicals have done for a century. They have put matters Jewish, Zionism, abuses of Zionists in Palestine, they put all that beyond correction and beyond a word of criticism. And that is not biblical Christianity. That is respect for persons. And the New Testament makes very clear that in New Testament Christianity, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, man or woman, bond or free. We are all one in Christ, and we all, at least those who are Christians, should expect to receive salty criticism and reproof when we stray from the straight and narrow. And yet that has been woefully lacking for a 100 years now, mm-hmm. Let's say more like 1,000. And the result is that Israel has behaved like a spoiled brat in the Middle East. You know, if you give a kid everything he wants and you never criticize him, you create a monster. And that's what the evangelicals have done to these evil Jewish leaders.
I'm amazed that they stand by the evangelicals and the far right and watch the liquidation of a people, the genocide of a people. If these were all Christians being slaughtered in Palestine over these last 20, 30, 40 years, one would hope that American Christianity would rise in one voice and say, stop. But they're not Christians.
Well, the truth of the matter is, though, Jeff, that in 1948, several hundred thousand of those Arab Palestinians were Christians.
Too long ago for people to remember,
well,
but you're 100%
that,
right.
Yeah. In the Blitz in Lebanon last year.
Those were Christian neighborhoods.
30% of them were Maronite Christians and other forms of Christians in Lebanon. Yet the loyalty of the evangelicals to the Jews, to the Zionists, is so great and so fanatical that they would rather have a Jewish life preserved than a Christian life.
Well, all life is supposed to be equal under God's law, and
yes.
It's not the way it is right now, apparently, according to some, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We can only hope that Christians continue to wake up and understand that we need to protect freedom for everyone in this country. It's the last real bastion of it on the planet in terms of the Western developed world. And unless they do wake up and come to the aid of the cause of righteousness, which is to protect our Constitution, we're going to lose eventually.
Right. Well, I think we're kind of in a race now for the finish. The Zionists have such tremendous economic, political, media, military control that I think they feel like you can rush it through and ram through.
That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, right. But on the other hand, the weakness of evil is that it often goes too far. And that's what they did several years ago when those 11 Christians were arrested in Philadelphia. You know, I wouldn't be speaking to you here tonight, Jeff, except for the pretext of the opportunity which that gave me to really get on talk radio and point out the ADL was behind it, Lynn Abraham was behind it, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that there is a divine providence over this nation still, and if we turn to him in repentance and humility before him and return to the God of our fathers and the values and laws that have made this civilization great, that there is still time. And I think they're continuing to go too far. And I would venture to say that, in fact, if the ADL is listening to me tonight, and I'm sure they are. I would say, hey, learn a lesson now, ADL. Do not introduce your hate bill into the Senate. Because when you do, I'm going to get back on talk radio. I'm going to get on dozens of talk radios. I'm going to blitz the Senate Judiciary Committee with my flyers. Thousands of calls are going to be in there informing those benighted senators of what ADL hate laws are doing around the world. You're not going to lose. You're only going to increase the education level of the American people concerning your deviltry and hate crimes education in the world at large. And in fact, it's spilling over. I was on a talk show radio.
Just about out of time, Ted. We have to draw
in Britain last week. So.
Uh-huh. Okay, we'll talk again soon. Thanks, Ted. And good night. Back tomorrow.